This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are scheduled to hear from Councilwoman C. Denise Marcel, and we will talk with her about the shakeup at CATS. Also, the apparent end of Louisiana Swift, 2 days away from the end of an era. And the sheriff's office vigorously pursuing gay men. We'll talk about it with C. Denise Marcel. Also, social commentator and author B.J. Callagher on how men behaving badly often get rewards in the public realm and why. B.J. Callagher on Anthony Weiner and why the man who has been disgraced and has disgraced his wife is still in the hunt to be mayor of New York City. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Your local number outside our area, please call 877-217-5757. And we're joined by Councilwoman C. Denise Marcel. Good morning to you, Denise.
Good morning,
Marcel.
Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. And we've got much to cover with you. And first of all, much going on regarding CATS. Isaiah Marshall, the man who was in charge, resigned from the board late last week, on Thursday night. Were you pleased with this development?
Well, yes. I think that because of all the recent controversy, I think it was good for him to go ahead and, you know, resign so that the system could move forward, and that would take the focus off of him and kind of let's move in another direction. So I think that was a smart move on Isaiah's part.
Do you think the rest of the board should go?
It's funny you should bring that up. I kind of think in because of all of the controversies and because of the finger pointing and people asking certain people to step down, I think it may be the best thing to do. I had looked at it as being a solution to what the public wanted to see, which was an entirely new board. The other thing that I think that does, Jim, is it eliminates people from being embarrassed in terms of saying it was your fault. And I kind of believe that the board all knew the process, and so, you know, why are we picking out one or two people? Everybody knew the RFP process, and nobody screamed foul play when they were on it. And there was also Jared Loftus, who was heading the board for the number of months that these things were going on. Isaiah Marshall was only there for a small window of that time. What about when he was covering everybody? He was a chair then, so that would give you another person that you know, if we're going to single them out like that. I don't like that. But, again, Isaiah was only there for a few months. The number of months that they say that things were going on was under someone else's leadership. The idea and the notion that nobody knew how the RFP was set out and they were all board members, I think is a little odd. So my point is, I see the value in removing or asking everyone to step down, but I also know that a lot of them on there have the ability to move it forward. So on the one hand, if you ask everybody to step down, I think it's going to push the time back because they're there and they're already working. So I don't think that they're not working. I just think that a lot of things have happened that negatively impact the entire board.
Isaiah Marshall out as chairman. Now, Brian Marshall, he got the heave-ho as the man who was brought in to right the ship. Do you think he got a fair deal?
Well, he's already gone, so I won't comment on that. I believe that people was unrealistic in asking for deliverables. And I think we've spoken about this before. The tax passed last year. They didn't get the first part of the money until, like, in January. It takes about 18 months to order buses. It takes time to order shelters. And people were looking for an immediate fix, or they say they were looking for an immediate fix, but immediate fix would not happen. I don't care who we had running that system. It takes time to make those changes. And so Having said that, no, I don't think he got a fair shake. I don't.
Well, another development involving the bus system, this one a statewide endeavor. The state did not come up with $750,000, and the Fed said the way the chamber was trying to configure some kind of bailout plan for Louisiana Swift was not valid. So come Thursday, August 1st, no more Louisiana Swift. What does this do?
Well, I think it presents a problem for a lot of people who still travel back and forth between here and New Orleans, and but for L.A. Swift, won't have the financial ability to do so. I think that L.A. Swift, we need to find a way in order to fund it. We talk about transit regionally, and so when we talk about it regionally, we have to include L.A. Swift because that is the only way that we are connecting right now to New Orleans for a lot of people. So I think that we need to look at it and find a way to fund it. And, you know, it was kind of beyond me why the governor wouldn't step up and pay that money. It's not a lot of money. It's a lot of people going to work, going to different to doctor's appointments and all of that. So, I mean, if people don't have a hands-on look at what's going on with that, then really, I guess, some people really not that concerned about it, and they figure it's taxpayers' dollars and, you know, why are we doing this? But if you really go down there and watch the people that get on that bus and the kids and the people that are going and what they're going to do, then you may take a different perspective on it. My perspective is we need to find the money.
297-5633 to talk with C. Denise Marcel, councilwoman from Baton Rouge, grew up in Eden Park. You're an ordained minister, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
How does that work with you obviously ministering to a flock in one way and working for the people on, you know, a day-to-day basis?
Well, I'm not a pastor. I'm an ordained minister, so I kind of work under the directions of Bishop Thelma Pearl and doing a lot of things. And you know, we all are ministers, Jim. I just happen to have gotten my ordination papers, and she'd like me to do a lot more in the church. Mm-hmm. I use my gifts a lot in the community. So we were all supposed to be giving and caring about our brothers and sisters, and that's ministry to me, and so that's how it works. It works really good. It doesn't work as well for my pastor since I'm involved in the public eyesight because it takes a lot away from mm-hmm. what I should be doing in the church.
Do you do marriages?
I can. Yes, I have done.
You have done marriages. Would you do a marriage with a same-sex couple?
With a same-sex couple?
Yes.
Probably not, because I would have to do it under my pastor, and she doesn't do those.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you have read the news of the past 2 days, both stories Above the Fold and The Advocate. The East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office, and a story today from Robert Stewart, says it should have taken a different approach with a task force that made at least a dozen arrests since 2011 using a struck-down law to arrest men at parish parks who discussed and agreed to have consensual sex with undercover agents away from the park. Metro Councilman John Delgado sent an email to the sheriff's office saying that the sheriff, Sid Gautreaux, owes an apology to the men arrested and the entire parish. The sheriff's office issued a formal statement following Sunday's first article by The Advocate, and it is such that, I'll read it, the sheriff's office is not, nor will it ever, set out with the intent to target or embarrass any part of our law-abiding community. We will consult with others in the legislative and judicial branches to see what can be done to remove this law from the criminal code that each deputy receives and also find alternative ways to deter sexual and lewd activity from our parks. What do you think? Councilwoman C. Denise Marcel.
Oh, I believe that, one, there are a lot of situations where people are wrongfully arrested. So I'm not prejudiced against any group, or I don't like profiling against any group. But if we're going to look at profiling, let's look at it on a larger scale. Let's look at why a lot of people are being pulled over because they ride in a certain neighborhood or in a certain car or have on a certain type of outfit. So, I mean, that's to single that incident out, I don't get it. With Delgado, it's an issue that should be dealt with by law enforcement. Not saying that they shouldn't have any remedy. Whatever their remedy is the same remedy that others have for the same types of acts. I don't understand why he would get involved in it. That would be between law enforcement and, of course, the DA's office of whether or not they prosecute it. I mean, if we look at how many people are pulled over and they say that they're being profiled against, and the charges may be dismissed, I haven't seen any remedy for them. So, I mean, why do we get – it's kind of like almost micromanaging, not saying it was a good thing that they did, but they do it all the time. I mean, it's that's something that law enforcement does, and I don't mean just the sheriff. I mean the city police included. So if we need some apologies, we need a lot of them. That's my thought on that. I'm not there, so I'm not up close and personal to it. Just what I've read in the paper, so I'm kind of working behind the eight ball on that, Jim. I'm out of town in Miami.
All right. Well, we will of course follow this story, and as you can imagine, passions are intense about it. Another story.
I can imagine, and if what they call sting operations, and if the law doesn't provide for it, that's why the mechanism is there by which the DA can make its determination not to bring the charges, and I think that's what happened. But I think part of what the people of Screaming Foul play on is, okay, they were embarrassed, and they want a remedy to even being arrested in the first place, and I think that's what I'm hearing. They certainly have that right.
Well, the DA has not gone forward with prosecution, saying that.
Right, correct. That's what I'm saying. They have not, but I think maybe some of them. I'm not sure of whether or not they were issued summons or they were all arrested. And I think the intent, and let me be clear on what I think the intent was on the sheriff's behalf, was to make sure that the parks were safe. They do this at the state parks. They have sting operations at the state parks, so I don't know if
right,
anybody knows that.
But usually in the past, Councilwoman, these activities were taking place in the parks. This is a case where people agreed to go to a private location and have consensual sex. If they're going to do this in the parks, why not do it in bars, coffee shops, you name it?
I get that, but I'm saying what I believe, and I don't have all of the facts. What I believe the intent was, if you're doing it at the parks, then I'm not sure if they were being told, if the information was that they were actually having the acts were going on in the parks. I don't know what
they were not going on in the parks.
I got that. Now we know that it wasn't going on in the park. What I'm saying is when they set up the sting operation, Jim, I don't know what the intelligence was for the reason and for them setting up the sting.
All right. Robert in Millerville, please be brief. Robert, you're on the air with Councilwoman Marcel. Hi, Robert.
This is Rancy.
Okay. I am sorry, Rancy. Go ahead.
That's okay. Got the wires crossed. To me, when I read the article, I thought of entrapment. It wasn't a nuisance to people in the park. But I had to turn the radio off to make the call, so that may.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yeah, Rancy says it may have been entrapment.
I'm not saying that it's not entrapment. I'm saying that there are other instances where the law enforcement, not just the sheriff, they do entrapment, in my opinion, and so people need to whatever remedy they have in the law. They need to do that. My question is, why would we start managing the sheriff's office? I think that we could be outraged by different things, and many times I speak out on the council about certain things that I see happen, but it doesn't mean that I have a right to start my own investigation is what I'm saying on it.
297-5633-877-217-5757. We'll return with Councilwoman C. Denise Marcel, who's in Miami, joining us, and we'll be back in 90 seconds on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. And we'll spend a few minutes with Denise Marcel, who is in Miami doing her work as a council person. And, of course, there's much permeating in our community about many matters, including a story that I'm sure the councilwoman is familiar with. Saturday, in the front page of the newspaper, NAACP fire BR prosecutor wanting Jesse Bankston to be canned for remarks that he allegedly made about Trayvon Martin, the assistant district attorney. Jesse Bankston was suspended last week pending an investigation. Have you followed this story?
I have followed it a little bit, Jim. I just want to say I'm not sure where the remarks were made. I believe if you follow many of us, you'll hear remarks. My concern would be if he had made it publicly, and I don't think that that's the case. I think it's a sensitive matter, so it's probably why it's getting some attention now, because the Trayvon Martin issue is a sensitive matter, and it's not just about Trayvon. It's about all of our kids and you know, how we feel about them being victimized, or how do we feel about the entire trial. So right now, it's not a good thing. It's never a good thing to say, but right now it's a very, very sensitive matter. I'm not sure of the context in which he said it, but again, I believe if you follow a lot of us home at the dinner table, we'll hear a lot of different things about how people really feel. So the question becomes, does he have the freedom to say what he wants to say? Did he say it in a manner, in a public setting, in a courtroom? He does prosecute people, so I believe that he needs to be careful on what he says, because people will take that into context when he's prosecuting African-American young men.
Well, according to the reports, a Facebook posting made by Afi Patterson, an East Baton Rouge assistant public defender, who occasionally posts things about this show, describes comments by Jesse Bankston Jr., who was suspended. The Facebook posting accuses Bankston of saying, quote, "These people make up their names. What kind of name is Trayvon? It's no wonder he got shot." Bankston is accused of making those remarks to Ms. Patterson on July 18th in a courtroom with Judge Lou Daniel, and court was not in session at the time. Now, I think the man's life, his body of work, all of those are mitigating factors, but if he made those remarks, it's a pretty stupid thing to do, if nothing else.
Correct.
And a very cruel thing to say. But
I don't know that he made
the remarks.
Right. The question number one becomes, did he make the remarks? And, you know, we're supposed to feel like everybody's innocent until proven guilty, because that's not how it's done. For real. But again, I don't condone him or anyone else making those types of remarks. And the question would be, what did Jesse have to say about it? I know him, and I just believe that those type of remarks can't be tolerated, especially in a courtroom. Where you're getting ready to prosecute some African Americans, because it's gonna create hostility, and if that's your personal opinion or your personal thought, I would suggest you keep that to yourself, especially in the position that you're in. I think it was cruel, and of course, you know I'm here in Miami, and
we know you're in Miami, but I'm sure you're hearing about what is going on in
right.
In
no, I was getting ready to say that there was a vigil for Trayvon here at the conference where I am, and so his mother is here. So emotions are really high here and there, I'm sure, and all around the world about this whole issue. So it would be something that you shouldn't say. That's my point.
Well, Mike McClanahan, the president of the local chapter of the NAACP, characterizes the comments allegedly, and I must say allegedly made by Mr. Bankston, is racist, gutless, heartless, and idiotic. And stray remarks like that, whether the man meant them or not, they do have an impact, and it certainly has impacted the career of Mr. Bankston right now.
Right, and so I would caution anybody from making those types of comments, period. Whoever you are, I mean, it's not the nice thing to do, regardless of whether or not Zimmerman was found innocent or guilty. Someone's life was taken, and we now know that they did not have a weapon, and so that's just cruel. A lot of the comments that I've heard, even on my Facebook page, are cruel, Jim. It's just I believe it's cruel, and so we live in that type of world. But when you are a public person, as Mr. Bankston is, you certainly don't need to say anything like that, because it could start something that we don't want to see.
Well, hopefully he will clear the air and talk. I don't know that he has talked publicly about this, but I looked it up after I read the alleged remarks, and Trayvon is a German name, and as a person of German extraction, I might take offense at somebody making fun of names from my ancestors,
and people have the right to name their children whatever they want to name their children. That's the bottom line. And I don't have to like it, and you don't have to like it. I don't have to like the name Jim, and you don't have to like the name Denise. But my mother liked it, and that's my name.
Would you name one of your children Jesse?
Would I name him Jesse?
Yes.
I won't have any more kids. That's a mood issue.
A man's name or a woman's name, quite probably, they're the most important things to them. It's amazing.
Correct.
When you call somebody by their name, they generally are appreciative, and most of us are quite pleased with our names. And I think to attack somebody by virtue of what they're named is off base, no matter what the name is. So
correct.
So
I think it was senseless.
Yeah, if it happened.
Correct. Let's remember, if it happened, it was senseless. I'm sure that it probably came from a credible source, and that's why it's taken so much.
Well, I think Ms. Patterson is a credible source, but
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's a credible source, so that's why it's taking legs, and that's why it's breathing, and that's why people want answers from Jesse.
Okay. Thank you, Denise Marcel, and have a good time in Miami.
I'm getting ready to go to conference right now.
Okay, I'm sure that'll be a good time.
Thank you.
Thank you. 297-5633 is your number, and we're joined now by B.J. Gallagher, author and social commentator who's been with us in the past, but it's been a few years, and the last time we were talking about men having issues and being in the public eye, and quite often men are not punished for their misdeeds. And one of those who is going to the masses in the great city of New York in hopes of being elected the mayor of the city by the sea is Anthony Weiner, who has exposed himself numerous times online, even after he resigned in disgrace from Congress 2 years ago. And yet, he is still in the race. His campaign manager resigned over the weekend, but polls show Mr. Weiner with a fighting chance of at least making a runoff. What do you think, B.J. Gallagher?
Hey, Jim, how are you this morning?
Fine.
I think Anthony Weiner still hasn't learned his lesson.
He hasn't learned his lesson.
No, although, you know, I can imagine how he would justify his behavior at the time, because the mind has an amazing capacity to rationalize, that he probably thought, hey, I've already resigned. I've already lost my office. What more could happen?
Well, he could lose his wife.
Yes, he could lose his wife, but maybe he was pretty confident in her, and her love and her loyalty and her forgiveness. But it does, you know, people do really dumb things. And it seems that in general, men do really dumb things around the issue of sex. And it's not just political men. They're just that I know that women are supposed to be the weaker species, but when it comes to impulse control and sexuality, I think perhaps the men are.
They're full of issues in some cases. In some cases.
Well, maybe not issues, but impulses.
Okay.
You know, we all have impulses all the time, and some of those impulses are illegal or immoral. I mean, we have impulses to lie, to cheat, to covet somebody else's spouse, we have impulses all the time, but we override those impulses because we've been socialized and we've developed morals and we've become more ethical, upright human beings. But that doesn't mean the impulse isn't still there.
Well, Maureen Dowd, in her column Sunday in the New York Times, says Bill Clinton was the greatest political and policy mind of a generation. Anthony Weiner is behaving similarly without the chops or the resume.
She's got a good point there. But we didn't exactly forgive Bill Clinton right away
did we? And there wasn't evidence of this kind. There was another kind of evidence, but I'm amazed to go to the ABC News site, for example, ABC, and find a picture of the congressman's private parts on the ABC News website.
It's kind of sophomoric, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you think, how old are you, Anthony? What are you, 15?
Well, and his wife was sent before the masses with her husband last week at a press conference to defend her man, and she's a beautiful woman. She's well-educated, has a lot of class, and apparently has much more class than her husband. Why do men often get their wives to go to the podium with them in these times in which they're under fire?
Well, first of all, he needs her, and political men need the support of their spouses. That as the public, when we look at those situations, we figure if she can forgive him, she must know something about him that I don't know, that his character, that his brains, that his contribution that he can make as a political figure. If she can forgive him, then I suppose I can forgive him too. I mean, one of the things we forget is that we as Americans tend to be very forgiving people. We're much more judgmental publicly than we are privately. We judge in public, but in private we go, give the guy a break, and he made a mistake, and look at all the good work he's done. That counts for something. And so we're a lot more forgiving in private than it seems if you look at the headlines.
Now, when we look at some of these men who have been embroiled in scandals of this kind over the last several years, Bill Clinton survived. He was impeached, but he survived and is now, according to most surveys, the most popular man in America. Bob Livingston, the congressman who came very close to being Speaker of the House from Louisiana, he's now one of the top-paid lobbyists on Capitol Hill. David Vitter of Louisiana, it was revealed that he was seeing prostitutes on a regular basis, mm-hmm. even making appointments with them from his House desk when he was a member of the United States House of Representatives, reelected in a landslide in 2010 in Louisiana. Do people care anymore about these kinds of things?
We say we care, but the research shows that generally they do get reelected if it's not out of the realm of, if the behavior isn't too egregious, that they do get reelected, and if they have a body of work that compensates for their personal indiscretion. And I tend to agree with that. I don't think that one personal transgression or even two or three personal transgressions should invalidate a lifetime of service and contribution. If somebody's really been, he's been there for his constituents, he's done a good job, he's accomplished a lot, I tend to be one of those people who says, you know, what he does in his private life, that's between him and his wife. I mean, the research indicates that the majority of men, I was just looking online this morning, according to the Journal of Marriage and Family Therapy that about a quarter of all American married men admit being unfaithful in their marriages. And it jumps up to three-quarters say they would be unfaithful if they thought they would never get caught. So who are we to judge?
Well, we'll go to the phone lines in a moment. 877-217-5757 for B.J. Gallagher, author and social commentator. And a listener does note that John Edwards behaved poorly and paid a price. He's one of the few, though. But there's no doubt that he was shot down in a mighty way and almost went to prison.
He did. But you'll notice what people get really upset about is the cover-up. We'll forgive the transgression. It's the lying that we find unforgivable. It was the same with Clinton. What people were upset about was not so much that he had a little fling with an intern in the White House, but that he lied. He lied to his wife, he lied to his colleagues, and he lied to the American people. That's what we're less forgiving of. We don't like to be lied to.
Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy. You're on the air with B.J. Gallagher.
Well, this particular subject goes back to the beginning of time, practically, and it's kind of thing going back and thinking back nearly 60 years ago, Earl Long with his fling with
Blaze Starr. Yeah, and Earl never paid a big price for that. He, the former governor of Louisiana, who you may be aware of, Paul Newman played him in the movie, B.J., and He had a fling with a stripper, and he lived to fight another day.
Yep.
But you have noted in previous conversations that as much as we say bad boy, some women are attracted to guys like this.
They are, and in some cases, the women are actually the instigators. Going back to Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky famously said to her friends before she ever went to Washington that she was going to go to Washington and get her presidential knee pads. You know, he was in her sights. She set out to get him. Riel Hunter approached John Edwards in a bar and said, "You're so hot." I mean, you got to admit, it's kind of hard for some of these guys if they have beautiful young women throwing themselves at them. Now, that isn't the case in all situations, but it happens often enough that you know, Henry Kissinger said that power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. And it's true that powerful men attract beautiful women who make themselves very available.
And Henry Kissinger should know he courted Jill St. John, and on an attractiveness level, I think the advantage goes rather solidly to Miss St. John. We'll be back with B.J. Gallagher after this brief pause on 89.3 WRKN. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Author and social commentator, and I mean an inspirational author and speaker, B.J. Gallagher is with us for just a bit longer. She's been featured on places like the CBS Evening News with Bob Schieffer, the Today Show with Matt Lauer on PBS, CNN, many places. B.J. has opined, and quite often it's about men doing bad things, and living to fight another day. The days in which somebody like Gary Hart, B.J., who was immersed in a scandal and backed away immediately, he tried to get back in the race for president, and it was unsuccessful, but that the playbook has changed considerably, hasn't it?
It has, but even in Gary Hart's case, remember that what triggered the reporters was his lying. It wasn't the cheating. It was the fact that he lied about being a cheater, and he dared the press corps to catch him in his lie. That's what we don't forgive. We don't forgive the lie.
We don't forgive the lie.
Nope.
And he lied. Bill Clinton, though, he lied. He He went on 60 Minutes and said that he had not been involved in a relationship with Jennifer Flowers, and then under oath it was revealed that he had. Sometimes men get away with lies.
That's true. Well, Bill Clinton, you know, he's the silver fox. He's really skillful. Remember how he used to parse words in that famous interaction with the interrogator? And he said, well, it depends on what your definition of is is. I mean, he would parse words like nobody's business. And ultimately, we did forgive him. He lied a lot. He didn't lie just once. He lied a lot.
Some are a little better than others.
He's good at it.
But the big mistake he made was leaving evidence in the Monica Lewinsky case. If it had not been for the blue dress, he quite likely would have denied this until his dying breath and gotten away with it. But
we all knew the truth, and Hillary knew the truth. I mean, Bill has always been a tomcat. He was a tomcat when Hillary married him, and he's probably still a tomcat today. So, you know, that tiger didn't change his stripes.
Well, it's unlikely that Anthony Weiner is going to change his stripes either. But Clinton arguably was a great president. Anthony Weiner might be a great mayor, might be. Who knows? But if he were to engage in this kind of behavior while mayor, and now with the social media as it is, there's no way he could lie and get away with it. He would be exposed, literally.
Well, that's one of the things that really has changed, Jim, is the whole social media atmosphere. That back then, when Clinton was fooling around, when Kennedy was fooling around, I mean, many, many, many presidents, governors, senators, congressmen have fooled around, as your caller pointed out, since the beginning of time. But back in those days, everybody didn't have a cell phone with a camera built in. We didn't have Twitter and Facebook, so those pictures could go flying around the world instantly within a matter of minutes. And that's the key variable that's changed, is that we now have pictures. Before, all we had was hearsay and newspaper reports and maybe a TV report. But today, there's pictures, and those pictures are irrefutable.
And sometimes text messages. That's what sent the former mayor of Detroit to prison. Kwame Kilpatrick was a series of text messages between the mayor and his aide, and it was such that it proved that they had lied under oath.
I know. There's something that happens. I remember I had a friend who was working in Washington for the L.A. Times at the time that that Clinton was fooling around with Lewinsky and it all came out. I remember calling her and saying, what happens to men when they go to Washington? What is it? Is there something in the water there that makes these guys lose their minds? And she said, you know, it's just intoxicating. And the power and the money and the fame go to their heads, and literally it's intoxicating. And then they lose their sense of good judgment. They rationalize. They think they'll never get caught. It'll just like a drunk drives home and says, I'm not drunk, I'm okay, and gets pulled over for drunk driving. Well, you know, these guys don't get DUIs, they get GUIs. You know, they're governing under the influence.
GUIs. Now, some might argue, BJ, that men in particular who go to Capitol Hill quite often are narcissistic to begin with. And it doesn't have to be Capitol Hill. It might be for the city council. You gotta have some sense of worth and, I guess, ego to be in the public eye at a certain level. So does this kind of behavior go hand in glove with seeking acclaim from the masses and validation at the ballot box?
Well, one could also assert that it's just the opposite. It's not their confidence in their ego. It's actually their insecurity that drives them. And, you know, Bill Clinton and you know, plenty of psychologists and psychiatrists have analyzed him from a distance, of course, and say, you know, that going back to his childhood, he has a very deep-seated need to be loved. And sometimes that got in his way of making tough decisions because he didn't want people to dislike him. But that need to be loved, that need for affirmation, that need for adoration, they may look like they're really confident and maybe even narcissistic, and I'm not a psychiatrist, but I would suspect that many of them deep down inside are actually driven by the opposite. They're driven by a need to prove themselves, to feel good about themselves, to be applauded, that they're actually driven by insecurity and self-doubt.
When will we see a woman involved in something like this? My goodness, if a female office holder had done something like this, BJ, she would not still be running for mayor of New York City.
That's right. Well, women generally aren't the sexual aggressors. One of the classes I teach is on how to prevent sexual harassment. And if you look at the numbers, only about 6% of all sexual harassment is initiated by women. 4% is women initiating sexual harassment with men, and 2% is actually women harassing other women. But 94% of all sexual harassment is initiated by men. So, you know, men's sex drive is just different from women's, and men are traditionally the aggressors, the pursuers, the chasers. So I doubt we're ever going to see that in public office, A, because there aren't a lot of women in public office, not anywhere near the number of men, and B, it's just not in our nature to do that. So if it ever happens, it will be a rare experience.
It's a case in which Anthony Weiner will quite likely lose the mayor's race in New York City, but the former governor, Eliot Spitzer, is back on the ballot, and it looks like he may have a good chance of coming back, BJ.
Yes, I think so, and Spitzer is one of those cases where I personally think he should come back. He's very talented. He's very bright. He has a lot to contribute. He already contributed a lot to the country. And that, as I said, I don't think that one mistake, particularly a sexual mistake, should invalidate a whole career. He's been contrite. Unlike Anthony Weiner, he's starting at the bottom again. You know, he wants to be comptroller. He's paying his dues. He's going to work his way back up again. He's admitted his mistake. And I'll bet, unlike Anthony Weiner, he has learned his lesson. I would be very surprised if Spitzer ever goes within 10, 100 feet of any prostitute anywhere. I think he's learned his lesson, and I think the American people are ready to forgive him and let him get back in the game and contribute what he has to contribute to New York.
Well, if he does mess up, we'll be playing your remarks.
it's that old saying, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And I think that's what's going on with Anthony Weiner, is he fooled us once, and okay, we'll let him off the hook. Mm-hmm. But now he's done it again, and now it's like, no, now shame on me. You don't get a second chance, buddy.
Mm-hmm. But before we let BJ get back to what she does, Kevin has a cut from last week's news conference with Huma Abedin, the wife of Anthony Weiner, defending her husband. It was painful to watch her. She is a woman whose accomplishments exceed those of her husband. She was the number two person for all intents at the State Department under Hillary Clinton. And here she was defending Anthony Weiner.
It was not an easy choice in any way. But I made the decision that it was worth staying in this marriage. That was a decision I made for me, for our son, and for our family. I didn't know how it would work out, But I did know that I wanted to give it a try. Anthony's made some horrible mistakes, both before he resigned from Congress and after. But I do very strongly believe that that is between us and our marriage.
Huma Abedin. Susan Estrich wrote that Huma is the one who should be the candidate.
People used to say that about Hillary, too.
Well, and she became one.
And I would suggest that that's one additional reason that Huma isn't mentioning, but that she has a lot invested in the marriage, and that just like, I mean, people wondered why Hillary didn't leave Bill after so many infidelities. And the truth is, as a power couple, they are more powerful together than they are apart. And that the woman has a career investment in a marriage like that. And so she's willing to get beyond certain things, not only for the sake of the marriage and her child, but also for the sake of her career. If she thinks he can put this behind him, she'll stick with him because who knows what her political future holds. She may want to run for office. So she's got a career investment there, too, even though she's not talking about it.
Another listener notes, and we've discussed this before, but it's been a while, if Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana had been embroiled in a scandal in which she was seeing male prostitutes, it's quite unlikely she would be as successful as junior Senator David Vitter, who was revealed as seeing female prostitutes. There is a double standard, B.J. Gallagher.
You bet. There always has been and there always will be. There is a double standard. Like it or not, there is.
Thank you, B.J. Gallagher. Always
Thank
a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. Bye-bye. And we must note that Saturday was the end of life for Lindy Boggs, 97 years old, died in Chevy Chase, Maryland, the former U.S. Congresswoman and ambassador to the Vatican from New Orleans, Congresswoman for 18 years. She succeeded her husband, Hale, who died October 16, 1972, in a plane crash in Alaska, his body never found. In fact, he was even reelected to Congress that November, despite the thought that he was dead, and he was. And then Lindy won a special election the following year. But she was ambassador to the Vatican under President William Jefferson Clinton, went to St. Joseph's Academy in New Roads, class of 1931, Tulane, 1935, the mother of Cokie Roberts. She died Saturday at the age of 97. And, of course, she lived on Bourbon Street for many years. And as Buddy Romer noted when he was on this show, when he was a kid and he lived with his grandfather, I think in the 600 block of Bourbon Street, his next-door neighbor, Lindy Boggs. And she is a one of a kind, one who made an impression in this state and around the world as one of the great ambassadors for Louisiana, and was one of the first women to be elected to the U.S. Congress, certainly the first from Louisiana. We'll miss Lindy Boggs, who will have funeral services Thursday, St. Joseph's Cathedral in New Orleans. Friday, Kevin Gallagher notes that Mick Jagger turned 70 years old, the lead singer for the Rolling Stones. 1975, the Stones began their tour of the Americas, their most famous tour, right here in Baton Rouge on June 1, 1975. That song named the top song ever, number one of all time by Rolling Stone, 1965, The Stones and Satisfaction. I'm looking at the list of songs they played in Baton Rouge. It's amazing what is available now online. They began with Honky Tonk Woman and finished with Jumpin' Jack Flash. The encore was Sympathy for the Devil. Mick Jagger, dead not dead, very much alive at the age of 70. And as I said, he's a guy who's probably going to be around for a long, long time. Lindy Boggs passed away at 97, and maybe Mick will make it as long as Lindy Boggs did. Fine review today in the Advocate from John Word about a performance Saturday night at the Texas Club by, of all people, Kevin Costner. He has a band called Modern West, and they played for 90 minutes at the Texas Club Saturday night. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, thank you for listening, everybody, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.